They were at least somewhat receptive. It was a matter of degree. Some are more, some are less. And they had all these different ways, you know, of having watched for all these years. But if there's no receptivity, it's a certain sign of divorce. I mean, every couple where the man was totally unreceptive got divorced. That's how they put it. I mean, they had a list of like 4 or 5 things that absolutely guaranteed that the couple would get divorced. And a few things over here that guaranteed that they wouldn't. And that was one of them, that he won't take input from her. Now, I think it was an absolute standard rather than a... And I think it certainly had to do with conflict. This is one study. I can't really sort of stand up and say I know it's true, but it was very interesting. But I know lots of marriages where he takes very little, or I would say more, he won't take much directly. A lot of men take a lot of input. I know Jyotish said once in a class he was giving, don't expect him to say anything. That's what Jyotish said. Don't expect him to say anything, but just watch what he does. That was Jyotish's advice. And I've seen lots of situations where he won't accept anything verbally and he won't acknowledge anything, but he will be different. So he does take it, he just doesn't take it in the way she wants him to take it. That's quite different. In other words, he won't become a woman. He insists with absolute determination on remaining a man. That's one of the things that I've seen happens a lot in marriages, that he remains a man. She wants him to become a woman. I had a cycle of counseling appointments. There's a lot of couples coming, and they all had the same issue, every one of them. The marriage almost worked. It was just a very little bit that she wanted different, and the difference, what she wanted, was the difference between a man and a woman. If he would just become a woman, then everything would be perfect. And I had to just deliver the news that he wasn't going to, because he didn't want to. He wasn't born to be a woman and he didn't like it. That's a big shock to us. But he doesn't like it. He just doesn't want to be like that. He doesn't want to be all touchy-feely, talky-walky stuff, you know? It's just not what he wants. He's male, you know? It's different. But it's very interesting. It just drives women crazy because it's so obvious. If he just expressed what he felt, if he just talked to me about this, if he just did this, it's like the list is really short. It's just that much. But he's not going to. So I've observed. And generally speaking, if he does, then that creates a whole other set of problems, which is that you don't have a man in the marriage anymore. You have two women, and then that gets very confusing. Now, there's degrees in all of this. This is, you know, this is the thumbnail sketch, but that's sort of what I've seen. These things come in waves through my life. There's like some big story that's up, and then there'll be like everybody will illustrate it. And then there'll be another one come, and then everybody will illustrate that one. That was a very interesting one. All these women who wanted their husbands to be like them. I mean, I started watching myself, and I realized I was doing exactly the same thing. My only complaint against David was that he wasn't me. Which it sounds so ridiculous, and I mean, I never had actually articulated it, but that's really what I was really upset about, is that he did not respond to situations like I did. Duh. But still, you know, you use a lot of emotional capital on that. And then you finally just, at some point in the whole big cycle, you just say not only, well, Devi said it perfectly once, she said, this was years ago. She said, I always admired Jyotish for being impersonal, but it took me many years to enjoy it. So you kind of go through progressive stages. And then you finally actually realize this is not only an okay quality, it's actually admirable. You know, look at the self-restraint involved. Look at the this, look at the that. Look at the big picture attitude. Look at the willingness not to get involved in the petty details. Look how much time they don't waste. You know? All these, just, you can look at it from lots of angles. But all that, you know, men look at women and they think, why would I ever be like that? We find ourselves so attractive. And we don't realize that a lot of men look at it and it's just not attractive to them. They may have spent incarnations extricating themselves from all of that little stuff. And they're just not going to go back into it. So that's what Swami says after he wrote the Secrets of Women book. when he just immersed himself in female consciousness, you have to understand, Swami, and I think to this room I can say it, but he got great pleasure out of telling many of us, I immersed myself completely into the consciousness of a woman. He said, I just lived like a woman for days. I couldn't even relate to being a man. And then I came out of it, he said, it was terrible. He said, all that emotion and just constant concern with all your how you feel about everything, he said, it was awful. I mean, that was just his point of view. It was just awful. And I had to say, yeah, I know. Yeah. But that's what we're often, you know, we're just trying to lure them back into it. And they just look at it and it just looks awful to them. Why would I go there? And anyway, there you have it. Shall we go to Darwin for a minute? Any other comments or about that? I just want to say a few things about Darwin because I'm so proud of myself for having figured it out. Now let's see if I can remember it. What Swamiji emphasizes, and it's really two things. First of all, he talks about what I was saying earlier, that Darwin talks about this whole thing as being mechanistic, and he does not bring into it the issue of where you're going, why you're going, and the role that intelligence and consciousness plays at a certain point. And I mean, the evolution that we're most concerned about is not between newts and worms and things like that. It's the evolution of our own awareness. And he wants us to understand that at a certain point, intelligence takes over. And intelligence really directs our evolution. And also because Darwin only talks about it in terms of mechanics, he's not really talking about the only evolution that really matters, which is the evolution of our consciousness. And there's several ideas. The first I was touching at the beginning, which is that Darwin has planted this thought in our minds that it's a struggle, and that it's all about a struggle for survival, and that everybody's interested just in surviving. Which, as Swami points out, by the time you get to the human level, and even on lesser levels than that, he uses the example of the dog, and there's many examples of horses in battle and elephants in battle and many creatures who have association with men, with mankind, also behave in very noble ways. I mean, and mother animals will sacrifice themselves for their young, or at least try to on many occasions. You'll see mother birds trying to lure predators away from the nests at great sacrifice of themselves. It's just not true. And so this whole thought form that this whole planet is run by everybody trying to survive at any cost is fundamentally a fallacy. And it's a very dangerous fallacy because it just gets us into thinking ways that just aren't true. Really, there's countless examples, and they're the examples of real evolution, is that when intelligence and consciousness comes in, survival itself may not matter. What really matters is our consciousness. And sometimes our consciousness of nobility is what we want to have survive. We don't care whether our bodies survive, it's our true self that has to be honored. And we need to take perhaps what Darwin has talked about, even just the ideas of beings evolving, but really see that we need to keep on evolving. It's not up to us to sort of constantly affirm the most animalistic qualities in us. We have evolved past them. So we take this image that Darwin has of things evolving and say, yes, thank God. And now we live at a much more elevated and refined level. And that's the fittest, somebody was saying. That's what is the fittest, is those who have the most refined consciousness. And then also Swami was saying about it, it's not mechanistic entirely. There's will involved. And then he was saying, hinting at it only, but so therefore take your evolution in hand. Instead of just sort of waiting, trying to evolve a little more, sort of waiting for your cells to mutate in some way or another, realize that you can influence it by the direction of your own intelligence. And then he brings it all the way back in such a marvelous way to communities. And what better way to evolve except by putting ourselves into social groups that actually foster what it is that we really want to have. And it's just really a wonderful way to sort of draw the whole circle. That's what he's saying. He's not trying to refute what they're saying. He's trying to interpret it differently. So you look at all of creation and you see this progressive cycle happening. And Darwin tried to put a certain meaning on it, that we all came from the animals and we're all going up. And we are. We did come from the animals and we are going up. But it's not our physical bodies, it's our awareness that's evolving all the way through. And that as we get to these higher levels of awareness, instead of applying to those levels of awareness the law of the jungle, we say we're out of the jungle. Let us apply to this level of awareness a much more refined consciousness and let that be our standard. Because that's what will ensure our survival. Our enlightened self-interest, if you want to call it what he called it before, but interest of in those qualities that'll really make us happy. And in our just daily conversation and interaction, that's what we need to emphasize and communicate to others and not allow these false ideas to stand. Okay, that was my little comment. Is there anything else that we need to talk about tonight? Okay, I should warn you, you have 26 pages to read next week. That's solidly twice as much as any chapter has been. I keep saying that because I have to make sure to know that. And it's Freud, so. But then we've made it. We've made it through. Okay, that's the spirit. Oh, right. That's the spirit. Okay.